ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
तु हास्य सक्षून्मां त्यक्तोदमपि भादते पिबन्तं त्वन्मुखं भोजा च्युतं हरिकथामृतम्। Because of my vow on the verge of death, I have given up even drinking water. Yet because I am drinking the nectar of topics about Krishna, which is flowing from the lotus mouth of your lordship, my hunger and thirst, which are extremely difficult to bear, cannot hinder me. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. To prepare to meet death in 7 days, Maharaj Parikshit gave up all food and drink. As a human being, he was certainly both hungry and thirsty, and therefore Shukadeva Goswami might have wanted to stop narrating the transcendental topics of Krishna. But despite his fast, Maharaj Parikshit was not at all fatigued. "The hunger and thirst from my fast do not disturb me," he said. "Once, when I felt very thirsty, I went to the ashram of Shanik Muni to drink water, but the Muni did not supply it. I therefore wrapped a dead snake over his shoulder, and that is why I was cursed by the Brahmin boy. Now, however, I am quite fit. I am not at all disturbed by my hunger and thirst." This indicates that although on the material platform there are disturbances from hunger and thirst, on the spiritual platform there is no such thing as fatigue. The entire world is suffering because of spiritual thirst. Every living being is Brahman or spirit soul and needs spiritual food to satisfy his hunger and thirst. Unfortunately, however, the world is completely unaware of the nectar of Krishna Katha. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore a boon to philosophers, religionists, and people in general. There is certainly a charming attraction in Krishna and Krishna Katha. Therefore, the absolute truth is called Krishna, the most attractive. The word Amrit is also an important reference to the moon, and the word ambuja means lotus. The pleasing moonshine and pleasing fragrance of the lotus combine to bring pleasure to everyone hearing Krishna Katha from the mouth of Shukadeva Goswami. As it is said, "Matirna Krishne Paratashvato Va Mithopi Vidyeti Grihabratanam Adanda Gobhira Vishatam Tamishram Puna punascharvatacharvananam." Because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress toward hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations toward Krishna are never aroused, either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by the combination of both. At the present moment, all of human society is engaged in the business of chewing the chewed, puna punascharvatacharvananam. People are prepared to undergo mrityu samsara varatmani, taking birth in one form, dying, accepting another form, and dying again. To stop this repetition of birth and death, Krishna Katha, or Krishna consciousness, is absolutely necessary. But unless one hears Krishna Katha from a revealed, realized soul like Shukadeva Goswami, one cannot relish the nectar of Krishna Katha, which puts an end to all material fatigue, and enjoy the blissful life of transcendental existence. In relation to the Krishna consciousness movement, we actually see that those who have tasted the nectar of Krishna Katha lose all that lose all material desires, whereas those who cannot understand Krishna or Krishna Katha regard the Krishna conscious life as brainwashing and mind control. While the devotees enjoy spiritual bliss, the non-devotees are surprised that the devotees have forgotten material hankerings. Translation: because of my vow on the verge of death, I have given up even drinking water. Yet because I am drinking the nectar of topics about Krishna, which is flowing from the lotus mouth of your lordship, my hunger and thirst, which are extremely difficult to bear, cannot hinder me. In this purport by Srila Prabhupada, there is a very beautiful elaboration on the nature of the vow which was taken by Maharaj Parikshit. We know that Maharaj Parikshit was cursed to die in 7 days. As a powerful king, a Paramhamsa Vaishnav, and also one endowed with great yogic prowess, he had the power to counteract this curse. But devotees of the Lord who are immersed in surrender to the Lord, usually they do not try to change the course of material nature, but rather they take every opportunity which is created through material nature as a means of deepening their own humble approach to surrendering to Krishna. Many persons who are not truly on the path of bhakti, they display many mystic powers. And perform miracles, which in essence is just controlling the principle of material existence in various limited ways. But the great devotees of the Lord, most often, even if they can, they will never display such miracles. Because after all, birth, old age, disease, and death are inevitable in this world, whether it happens today or tomorrow. So therefore, what a devotee is always trying to display through his own life and through his teachings to others is how, in the situations that we're in, to take shelter of the Lord. So Maharaj Parikshit could have nullified that curse. Terrible curse to die in 7 days. Some of you today in our class are doctors. You know what a tragic experience it is to give a patient a diagnosis that you have cancer or you have AIDS or you have some other deadly disease, and at the most you have 6 months to live. The patient goes through a desperate, tragic experience of receiving that news because they are attached to their bodies. Maharaj Parikshit, he was not an old man. He was at the prime of his life. And when he was told that he was cursed to die in 7 days, He welcomed it. He was thankful that Krishna, through the mouth of this Brahmin boy, has given me the chance to utilize this 7 days to hear about Krishna. And it is being described by Srila Prabhupada here that while he was in the forest on a journey, he became very thirsty and very hungry. And in that situation, he could not tolerate the burning condition of his thirst. So he was seeking, hunting for water. How long had he not drunk water? He had not drunk water probably for just a few hours. But because it appears it was a very hot day, he became very thirsty. And plus, he was in the jungles where there is much shade here and there. So he went to the ashram of Samik Muni, who was absorbed in meditation. And he requested, "Sir, O gentle and learned Brahman, I am come as a guest in your house. Please provide me some water." Of course, we know in the Vedic society, it is a very, very sacred principle that one must receive a guest with great devotion and hospitality, whoever that guest may be. It is said in the Shastra that even if your worst enemy comes to your home, you should treat him with such kindness and love that he forgets that you're enemies. It is also explained in the Shastra that Krishna says that when an unexpected guest comes to your house, how you treat him is how you treat me. What to speak of an expected guest? And in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes that there is a particular hellish planet. I'm not going to go through all the details of what happens in that hellish planet, but for those of you who have read the fifth canto, you have some idea. A hellish planet where the Yamadutas torture a person, and that is a reaction for not giving proper hospitality to an expected or unexpected guest to your home. Now, Maharaj Parikshit happened to be the emperor of the planet Earth. So he was not just an ordinary guest. He was, to say the least, a special guest. If Mr. what is his name now? Narasingha Rao? If he were to come in the temple, we would give him nice garland. We would at least give him a sitting place and watcher. We'd give him nice prasad. Everyone would say Haribo, like that. What is the prime minister of one country? And he doesn't even have really any control over this country. Only Krishna can control India. No human being. So, Maharaj Parikshit, he was not only the king of the planet, but he had complete control over every living being in the planet, and everything was going on according to his desire. We read in his life that Kali Yuga could not even be given entrance into anybody's life and the whole planet because Maharaj Parikshit was such a powerful king. He had such control over every aspect of his kingdom. He would regularly go on his chariot and go to every kingdom, every town, every village throughout the land to make sure everyone was worshiping Krishna and following the regulative principles. And everyone was. Not simply because of his sword. The rascals and thieves, they were very good because they had utter fear. They knew that through his agents, he was all pervasive, and if they did any sin, they would die. But the good people, simply because they loved him, they wanted to please him by being just the way he wanted them to be. So such a great personality as a guest in this little ashram in the jungles. So Maharaj Parikshit, because of his intense thirst, he expected at least a glass of water. But Samik Muni was so immersed in meditating on the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, in a state of samadhi, he did not even notice that Maharaj Parikshit had come in. But Krishna, sometimes for the sake of a higher purpose, casts his devotee under the spell of yoga maya into a condition of human frailty, even apparently a fallen condition. And Maharaj Parikshit became angry because he wasn't getting the proper respect. And not so much that, but he was angry that a first-class Brahmin was completely transgressing the regulative principles of the scripture by not welcoming a guest, whoever he was. So actually, in essence, Maharaj Parikshit was not going to chastise that Brahmin simply because he didn't get water. But as the king, it was his duty that every Brahmin must be a perfect Brahmin. Today, what king in any country makes sure that the priests and the Brahmins are perfect according to the Shastra? They don't even know what it's supposed to be. But Maharaj Parikshit knew that if this Brahmin is a rascal, then he's going to lead the whole society to be rascals. If he's not following the Shastra, because he's a Brahmin, I'm not going to punish him so bad, it's not such an offense, but I have to do some token punishment to show him that he's not right. So Maharaj Parikshit was angry because this man was threatening the religious principles of the world. That was the first thing. And the second thing is he was thirsty by Krishna's arrangement. So with his bow, he picked up a dead serpent. And he placed the serpent upon the shoulder of the Brahmin as if he was garlanding him with a snake. Of course, many worshippers of Lord Shiva, they would be considered this the nicest garland. But it was not meant like that. It was meant to show his dissatisfaction. So when this news came to the son of Samik Muni, whose name is Sringi, he became very angry, intolerable. He knew the glory of his own father's devotion. He considered this Vaishnavaparad. And he considered that this king, simply because of his royal birth and his great opulence in life, that he has become so proud, so puffed up, that he dares to insult the Brahmin community who is upholding the principles of God's laws in the world. So Sringi, it is explained that Kali entered into his heart for the purpose of misleading society in this age. Because when the Brahmin class, the upholders of Dharma, become corrupt, the religion of the whole society falls to pieces. Kali had no entrance in Maharaja's Parikshit's kingdom. Maharaj Parikshit, after defeating Kali, and Kali surrendered at his lotus feet, he said, I will allow you the places where there's illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. Wherever any of these four things take place, you are the king. You are the controller. Anyone who takes part in these activities are your slaves. But anyone who doesn't, you cannot touch them, you cannot go near them. Kali said, but as long as you're king, nobody's doing that. He said, all right, wherever too much people are too much greedy for gold. But factually, in his kingdom, nobody was even greedy for gold. Kali had no place. Therefore, although it was Kali Yuga, there was no Kali Yuga. The time was right, but the influences were not there. So, Krishna, in order to bring about the proper atmosphere for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come and teach the Yuga Dharma in Kali Yuga, he had to first let Kali Yuga in. After all, if he didn't let Kali Yuga in, Lord Chaitanya would not be glorified as Patita Pavan Avatar, the deliverer of the most fallen. Because when Maharaj Parikshit was king, there was nobody fallen. So it wouldn't be so glorious if Lord Chaitanya descended during his reign. So Krishna wanted, in his most munificent and merciful of all incarnations, he had to allow Kali Yuga to come in first for some time. But it was very symbolic and very instructive how he allowed Kali to come in. Through the Brahmins. Through the Brahmin, when he cannot control his senses, his anger, when he loses his discrimination, when he loses his good judgment and his compassion, Kali completely takes over the world. That's why Srila Prabhupada said that in this Varnashram system, there's Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, we need all. But he says, but the first and most important principle is we must train Brahmins. Not Brahmins by birth who have sacred threads which you can buy for 50 paisa in marketplace, but Brahmins in quality. The Bhagavad Gita explains one who is self-controlled, who is peaceful, who is learned in the scripture, who is a friend of all living beings. Whatever your birth, whatever your nationality, if you have those qualities, you are a true Brahmin. Srila Prabhupada said, when we establish the head of society, the Brahmin, then automatically there will be leadership and all the other varnas and all the other ashrams will naturally follow their true path in devotion to Krishna. But when the Brahmins are corrupt, when the spiritual leaders of society are corrupt, there's no hope for society. So, in this way, Sringi cursed Maharaj Parikshit. And Maharaj Parikshit, when hearing this curse, he gladly... It's a death sentence. It's like some devotees, they get put in prison, they get death sentence. Same thing. Be welcome, yes, wonderful. If that's, I misunderstood, I know my motive. My motive was not bad. But Inconceivably, if this is Krishna's arrangement, then I will accept it gratefully. And how to accept it? That is the great, great mercy of Maharaj Parikshit to all of us. To spend 24 hours a day for all that 7 days simply associating with the pure devotees of the Lord and hearing about Krishna. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, in the Sadhu Satsang. But what is interesting is, although for a few hours in the jungle, when he was doing expedition, because in those days, Kshatriyas, it was part of their duty to sometimes go on hunting expeditions to kill the dangerous, dangerous animals that were plaguing and causing danger to the society of the innocent people and so forth. Here it is described by Maharaj Parikshit something very wonderful. Try to understand that this verse is in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. That means he sat through the first canto, the second canto, third canto, all the way through the entire 9th canto. 7 days. That means it must have been at least 5 days. If he said this at the beginning of the first canto, it wouldn't be so serious, his thirst. But he's saying it during the 10th canto. That because I'm hearing the nectaring fresh waters, I'm receiving the waters from your lotus mouth of Krishna Katha, they are completely quenching my hunger and thirst. And I'm not at all fatigued. And I'm not even thinking about these things, which are so severe to a human being. When he was on his hunting expedition, he became very thirsty. But when he was associating with Shukadeva Goswami and hearing the glories of Krishna, there was no hunger and thirst. Not even the slightest. We should know that the heart is thirsting for Krishna. The body thirsts for water. The body hungers for food. And we know how intolerable it is. Through the process of devotional purification, we must learn to thirst and to hunger for Krishna. The heart is starving for Krishna. But we're so much in the bodily concept. We are so much endeavoring in this world to give food and drink to this body that we've completely become unconscious and neglectful of the totally undernourished, malnutritioned, starvation condition of our heart. That's why Srila Prabhupada used to say, if you go out and feed people, that's nice. But it's not really doing so much. All you're doing is feeding their body. Naturally, their body is hungry and thirsty. Take care of their body. But what about their hearts? It's starving. What are you going to do for that? And for that matter, the rich people are starving in hearts as much, if not more, than the poor. What about showing compassion to them? Some people say that a real spiritual person is very kind upon the poor. That's true. But in heart, practically everyone is poor. Why should we discriminate? We should give proper nourishment and foodstuff to relieve the thirst and hunger of both the wealthy poor people and the poor, poor people. Those who superficially decorate their dying bodies with all sorts of opulent foodstuffs, beautiful dress, nice homes, nice clothes, jewelry, adoration, and those who have nothing to decorate their dying bodies with, Their hearts are the same. Their souls are the same. They're starving. But so much intoxicated that they don't even know that they're starving. The poor people are so much infatuated by the starvation of their bodies, they're completely unaware that their heart needs food. And the rich people are so much infatuated by feeding and decorating these bodies that they've completely forgotten. So in this way, everyone is under the grand illusion of forgetfulness of their real needs. But you see, because Maharaj Parikshit, by the mercy of Srila Shukadeva Goswami, was tasting the sweet waters of Krishna Katha, he was being so completely nourished and fulfilled, he didn't even consider the condition of his body anymore. It's meant to die. Let it die. I have tasted immortality, amrita. Amrita means the nectar of immortality. So taking care of body is very good. It's necessary. On a practical level. But on a spiritual level, Maharaj Parikshit is teaching us how to take care of the soul. How to take care of the heart. Which is the seat of God. Which is the seat of consciousness. Where actually all happiness and distress, they're all experienced through the via medium of our heart. And they're actually experienced by the soul. So, Srila Prabhupada explains this beautiful verse by Prahlad Maharaj from the 7th canto, that because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress toward hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Maharaj Parikshit, by focusing and concentrating his attention on Krishna consciousness, was able to control his senses perfectly. Prahlad Maharaj explains, if we cannot control our senses, we become addicted to materialistic life, we make progress toward hellish conditions, and our inclinations toward Krishna are never aroused either by the instructions of others, by our own efforts, or by a combination of both. The basic principle of yoga is to control the senses. And how to control the senses? Maharaj Parikshit is teaching us. There are 9 processes of devotional service. By hearing the glories of the Lord, by chanting His glories, by remembering Him, by worshipping the deity in the temple, by serving the lotus feet of the Lord or His devotees, by carrying out the order of the Lord and His devotees, by praying to the Lord, by befriending the Lord, and by surrendering everything to the Lord. Through these 9 processes, at every moment of the day, we can keep our senses connected to Krishna. And as long as our senses are nicely connected to Krishna, then they're controlled automatically. Just like if a foolish child is doing all naughty things which are dangerous for him, if you just occupy him with something good for him, then he's automatically out of trouble. He's automatically perfectly under control. Right? Our mind and our senses are like children. We have to treat them like children. Don't give them what they want. Give them what they need. If your mind and senses are occupied in Krishna's service, then they're automatically fully controlled. But the mind and the senses have been created in a dynamic principle, which means they always have to be active. So as soon as you stop engaging in devotional service, your mind and your senses are going to be searching for maya, searching for some subtle or gross form of sense gratification. Therefore, it is said the idle mind is the devil's workshop. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, when I rise in the morning, I beat my mind with shoes 100 times. And when I take rest at, before I take rest at night, I beat my mind with a broomstick 100 times. What does that mean? Shoes represents the lotus feet. By chanting the holy name when we rise in the morning, we keep our mind always at the lotus feet of Krishna. We keep our mind always fixed in devotional service. So in this way, this is the secret of success. To follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Parikshit by learning how to find our nourishment, find our pleasure, find the sweetness of our life in Krishna, and not to look for any of these essentials anywhere else. Is there any questions? Has he given? He will give if you want it. If you ask for it through your prayers and through your actions in life, he will give. That is his promise. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyajim nam namaskuru mam evaisha shishatyam te pratijani priyoshime. Always worship me, become, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. If you're honestly and sincerely striving to always think of Krishna, to worship him, to offer obeisance to him, then Krishna will give you the strength. But if you are not willing to endeavor in this path, why should he give you the strength? You don't want the strength. He's giving, but you're not taking. Krishna's ultimately giving everybody. The question is who's accepting and who's rejecting, and to what degree. Just in the verse that you have heard today, within that is all the strength to fulfill all your spiritual needs. But you have to take the strength by following what has been said. Huh? Is there any question? Yes?
Now what happens is sometimes by mistake or by some material involvement, we leave that process of life process and we are entitled to some extent a little bit to material life. And Maya just catches up. We are just entered. Again that fallen down condition comes. And again it takes long time again to come up actually. Maintain that level, come to the same platform where you are before. A small mistake makes us downfall, and again to come to that level takes really hardship.
This is the babbling of a foolish child that we are hearing today. If a little child, the parent is giving the child so much throughout its life, then the child does something very bad. Or even some bad. Actually, what child does something very bad? I mean, does the child go out and shoot somebody in the head? Well, they play and they stay out too long or something. What does the parent do to them? He punishes them. Right? How do they punish them? They punish them in such a way that the child has to suffer a little. And although the parent knows that the child is only suffering a little, the child thinks that he's suffering a lot. If you spank the child, all the child thinks is, my parents, they just don't care about me anymore. They just hate me now. When they're going through the punishment, they completely forget all the good things that the parents have done to them. They just think, oh, I hate you. Right? Because they have to go through that small, short gap of purification for their own good, to teach them a lesson, not to do it again. But to them, it's not a small gap. It's like eternity. Right? But it's actually not it's not the real perspective of the situation. The fact is that the parents have given so much for so long. But it is the need of the child to learn a lesson. Unless there's a good amount of suffering, he'll never learn his lesson. He'll keep doing it again. But it's really not very long. Krishna is the perfect father. He knows exactly how to correct us according to our offenses. And you have to have faith and trust that this is perfect. Whatever we've done for Krishna is never lost. Krishna never forgets. Whatever credits we have on a spiritual account are never lost. But unless we progress toward the goal, then all those things have very little value. All of our spiritual credits from the past are meant to push us forward. But if we've come to a roadblock, to one extent or another, Krishna has to remove that obstacle from our hearts, from the core of our hearts, once and for all. And because you're so attached to the obstacle itself, it's painful when he tries to pull it out. And when he's trying to pull it out, you're thinking, oh my God, Krishna, why? What have I done that I have to go through this? I've been chanting your name for a year. Don't you remember all those other things? Why you're making this happen? This is the way all children are when they're punished, when they're corrected, when they're reprimanded. So just accept the fact that you're a little child in spiritual life and have faith in your father and your older brothers and continue on. It's not so bad. Is there any other questions? We are all children. Just like if you have a toothache, it hurts when it's pulled out for some time, but then it's gone. Right? So the same principle. When Krishna purifies us, his purification is out of love. And if we understand that it's out of love, even when we're going through the pain, we feel good within our hearts that Krishna is showing me this special kindness. Yes? Parikshit? No. Not at all in the slightest. It was Yoga Maya. It was Krishna's arrangement for many purposes. One, for the Srimad Bhagavatam to be spoken. He wanted Maharaj Parikshit to be the example for all time to follow. Therefore, he put him under this influence. Personally, Krishna did. Just to glorify Shukadev Goswami, to glorify Maharaj Parikshit, and to glorify the ultimate essence of all knowledge in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which was about to be spoken. The acharyas do not see it in that light. the directors of TV shows, they see it in that light. But we accept the version of the Acharyas. Because nowhere in the scripture does it say that Kali Yuga was in his crown. But in the scripture and the commentaries of all the Acharyas explain that he was simply being utilized as an instrument in the hands of Krishna to ultimately glorify him more. If this didn't happen, we would never have even heard of Maharaj Parikshit. There were so many great kings who were great devotees of the Lord. His name is eternal amongst the greatest saints. They worship his lotus feet because of the way he chose to live his last 7 days. He was not ever under the influence of Kali. Yes? Externally, it may appear that way. But Krishna was directly orchestrating everything. Yes? By following the way he wants us to live, we are showing the world his glory. Our actions speak louder than our words, but they must both be there. And when it says three times, of course we should be doing all day long, always. That's really the essence of the samsara prayers, to follow his instructions. He's the representative of God. But at the same time, there should be regulation where we do have certain times of the day where we specifically and exclusively focus our mind on the mercy of our guru. Because that will give us the proper inspiration and the proper strength to follow his instructions. Well, one alternative is you take sannyas, that means you never have a house, that means you never have an unexpected guest. That's the way I deal with the matter. But you're in a harder path. You have to use your God-given intelligence, how you could best serve Krishna. You see, if your enemy is coming to your house specifically to cheat you or to take advantage of you, you must protect what is Krishna's. Because then they're not really guests. They're not really on the level of a guest. Just like at one time at New Vrindavan. During Bhagavatam class, into our temple came people with guns and they started shooting devotees. And they started breaking everything in the temple. And it was a terrible scene. So Srila Prabhupada, who's the same one who tells us that you must treat an unexpected guest or an expected guest with great respect, he told us that you should get guns, and if these people come back, you should shoot them to protect the innocent children, women, and other devotees. You can't just let them come in and just destroy everything and exploit God's people. So for them, we didn't have water and sitting place and garlands. We had bullets and guns because that was what was needed. Because they were not really coming as guests. They were coming as plunderers. There's a difference. If an unexpected person comes as a guest, if he comes in that role, then we must treat them with all respect. But if they come as a plunderer, then we must protect what is sacred from falling into the hands of those who are not sacred. So in that way, you have to use your good discrimination. Again, you must use your discrimination. You should always be charitable to do whatever you can do for those who are in need according to your capacity. But if you understand that somebody is cheating you, then you should be very careful. But the best and nicest thing is give them something that they cannot misuse, such as prasad. Just carry a little bag with nice prasad. And any beggar that comes to you, give them prasad. Can they misuse prasad? If you give a beggar some money, he may buy bidis, or he may go buy alcohol, or he may go see a prostitute. Do you want your hard-earned money to go for those nonsense things? If you know the person really needs food, if you give him money and you know he's going to buy food, then you do it. But do you know? In the old days, it was obvious a beggar was hungry. But now, people exploit every occupation. The people who are corruptly capitalistic, they take advantage of every situation. They'll go to holy places and build 5-star hotels with bars and serve meat, because they know so many people come to the holy places. So they're exploiting the holy place for their capitalistic purposes. They'll put themselves in the role of sadhus as a business. Huh? They'll take the role of beggars as a business. Greed has corrupted every occupation. But whether that person is really starving, if you give them prasad, you've helped them. You've done great service and charity for them by feeding both their body, their mind, and their soul. And if the person is actually probably richer than us, but just is in the disguise of a beggar, or somebody who's kind of poor, but who's just giving all the money to some rascal man, if you give prasad, you're still feeding his body, mind, and soul. They can only benefit. So this is the best way. Just carry some nice prasad and give to all beggars. And that's the ultimate charity you can give them. And it's a sure thing. Then you don't even have to discriminate. There's no discrimination in who you give prasad to. This is the problem in Kali Yuga. that the ordinary man doesn't know who to respect or not, who not to respect, who to show compassion to and who not to show compassion to. This is, everything's mixed up because there's so many pretenders. How did Kali come into this age? When he first came in, he came disguised as a king. Although he was a low-class person, he came in disguise of a king. And everybody thought he was king until Maharaj Parikshit. He had that discrimination. He said, "You're not a king, you're a rascal. You deserve to die." So Kali is always disguising himself as somebody else. Why? So that everybody's so bewildered, they don't know who to trust, who not to trust, who's good, who's not good, who's really poor, who's just pretending. Isn't that the way the world is all over the place? Even when you go to buy something, you don't know if the person's telling you the truth or not. There are four legs to religion. Cleanliness, austerity, self-mercy, and truthfulness. And of them, the leg of truthfulness is the last leg that's still standing in the age of Kali, and that's falling to pieces. That's being crippled. Because if you can't trust anyone, you're just totally bewildered. You never know what to do or who to do it for, right? Therefore, we need a guru, someone we can trust, who can give us proper information, a representative of God. Otherwise, we're just subjected to the influence of everybody's opinion. And the worst person is our own mind. Therefore, guru tells us that don't bother trying to discriminate who deserves charity or not. Just give them prasad. Because they all deserve prasad, whoever they are, even if they're crooks. They'll benefit. If you give them money, they're not going to benefit. But if you give them prasad, they will. And somebody who you really know for sure, then you can help them in a more extensive way. Huh? And giving money is giving them something material. But giving them the holy name of Krishna. Just like when our devotees, when they're approached by beggars, they say, "Chant Hare Krishna, and then I'll give you this." And of course, if they're really whatever, whether it's for business purposes or whether it's out of desperation, they all say, "Hare Krishna." So you've given them the holy name, and then give them prasad, and they're happy. And if they're not happy, that means they weren't hungry after all. But they'll still eat the prasad. This is what we have found. So in this way, your life will be peaceful. Yes. Can you speak louder? Question is, did Kamsa know he's a demon, or did he think he was a devotee pretending to be a demon? That's the question. There are two types of demons. One is someone who is simply a demon. Someone who out of anger and greed has gone against Krishna. And another is someone who is actually a pure soul. What? Oh, I see. Because he was not acting in the capacity of a great personality. He was acting in the capacity of a demon. So therefore he was to be criticized. Whoever he was acting in the capacity of a demon. They weren't so much criticizing Kamsa after he was killed, they were glorifying Krishna for killing him. Why? Because Kamsa, he was killing innocent children. He didn't know he was a great devotee. He was not one of the Jai Vijay categories either. In his previous life, he was Kalanemi, another demon. So whatever their reason, some come by the arrangement of Krishna, and some come simply out of their own greed as demons. But either way, they're in the same capacity as demons. And either way, they're meant to show people what this demonic influence does to the world and to our own lives, and how the only refuge from this demonic influence is to take shelter of Krishna and allow him to slay these demons. After all, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Indra, the greatest of the demigods, the greatest of the saints, they all stood at the bank of the ocean of milk to plead with Krishna to come to kill Kamsa. Huh? Kamsa was glorious in the sense he got everybody to take shelter of Krishna. In that way, we see the glory of demons. They might not know their own glory, but we understand it. That they force us to take shelter of Krishna because they're so powerful, there's nothing else we can do. Their activities are condemned. But how they're helping us to come closer to Krishna's lotus feet is glorious. So the great personalities, they condemned Kamsa because he was irreligious, whatever the internal reason is. They were condemning his actions. Internally, everyone's ultimately a pure spirit soul. You don't hate the person, you hate the disease that's covering the person. They were condemning the diseased condition Kamsa was in. But actually, when they saw Kamsa's soul enter into the body of Krishna, everybody in the assembly understood that Kamsa was the most fortunate because he was personally killed by Krishna and he was liberated. It's Krishna's causeless mercy. We should be so fortunate. But unfortunately, in this age, you cannot be such a great demon that Krishna is going to come and kill you. So it's better to become his devotee.